Great. So are you willing to say your name and where you teach?
My name is Peter Taylor. I teach at the University of Massachusetts Boston, or UMass Boston for short.
Awesome. So we met the other month because you held a workshop at your home, and I didn't know much about the workshop beforehand. I saw it listed on the conference program for 4S, the science studies conference that we both attended, and I absolutely loved the workshop, and I was especially really blown away by the concrete ways in which you integrate feedback into conversations, into interactions. I've been trying to put some of your practices into play myself. So I would love to talk to you about why you think it's important to be intentional about how we solicit feedback from each other.
A good question. It's evolved for me over time, but I think the end point is I think the world would change if every interaction finished with a plus delta, where plus is something you appreciated, just one thing, and delta was something that could be developed further. Not something that was bad and needs to be changed because it was bad, but some way that the person giving the feedback actually envisages concretely how it could be developed, extended, and that includes how they could, the feedback person could develop and extend it. Now, that's the current endpoint. It evolved from a very pragmatic situation of having to advise many students doing master's research projects and wanting them to give work in progress presentations rather than final presentations. So you give work in progress presentations so that there's room to improve in response to feedback. It's kind of soul destroying for faculty members to give feedback on final papers or final presentations because nothing gets done with them, or there's no guarantee that anything gets done, or it's unlikely that things get done with them. So work in progress presentations, say two-thirds of the way through, give an opportunity for someone to get feedback. But the practical demands of my job directing a graduate program without very much support and with the other full-time person on medical leave and then early retirement and then not replaced meant that I had to distribute the load of giving feedback. I couldn't be the sole source of useful advice to students. So I mobilized them all to give each other feedback. And you want it to happen quite quickly because you've got a lot of presentations to get through in a 3-hour graduate student session. So I just picked up this plus delta and got them each to do it. In early days, it would be pieces of paper. And so there'd be a lot of passing around of little pieces of paper, and everyone would leave with, you know, 15 pieces of paper. I would often wonder, what the other people said, because I wouldn't see it. These days, we can do it online if we have a class that's meeting with students from a distance, and they can type into a form, and in principle, I could see the range of comments other students make. Over the years, I've started to say, look, I'll just relax about that. I'll just accept that other students are giving interesting, diverse advice, and the person getting it has to, or I should not, shouldn't say advice, I should say feedback, and the person getting it has to decide which to take into account, to take more seriously, and which to just let go by. So that's kind of the origins of the very simplest feedback, and it's a democratizing feature. It's like everyone is responsible for making everyone else's project advance. It's a decentralizing feature. It's not just a faculty member. It gives me a little bit more space to take some risks because I know I'm not the only one who's giving feedback. And I think those principles of decentering and democratizing it follow for the different kinds of feedback we've used in the workshop that you experienced a shorter version of.
Yeah, I loved that moment a minute ago where you said, oh, I don't mean advice, I mean feedback. Are you willing to say a little bit more about how you would contrast those two different kinds of responses to a person?
Well, advice has more of a power relationship. It's suggesting that, okay, Peter's the professor, so if he says something, I should do it. And feedback, that's a bit of a nondescript word, but the contrast was that the feedback you get in these plus deltas is something for you to take in, some of it to use digestive metaphors, some to digest and make into your own body tissues, and some to excrete. It's not, you can pass it through. And I hope none of it's stuff that you need to choke or vomit up. So it's because there's a range of people giving advice, it's not going to be consistent. Some people are going to like some things, and some people are going to be less critical. Other people are going to be more concrete. And that gives you a better sense of the way you are in the world. It also says that if people are given slightly different feedback or even contradictory feedback, it's your responsibility for deciding and evaluating what you can work with. So that's another aspect in which it's the power relationship is switched, so that the person getting the feedback has more, is asked to have more agency. I can say a little bit more about that dynamic, though, there was a early time teaching or coaching graduate students in my program, which is called Critical and Creative Thinking, but it's really a program where people come in the middle of their careers or lives to move in new directions or to take certain aspects of their life and work more seriously. But there was early on, the students were having a little bit of trouble taking in all the kinds of dynamics, including this kind of feedback dynamic. There are no grades in my course, there are only comments. So that's another way in which I try to diffuse the power relationship. And so we did an exercise. I won't go into the details of it, but it was some brainstorming and then some synthesis. And we ended up with seeing that there were five principles that the students were grappling with in the early stages of these research courses, and they didn't all pull in the same direction. And one was negotiate power and standards. So if I say I'm not grading, they still think, well, but he gives a grade at the end of the course. Oh, he's got some hidden principles. Why isn't he telling them? And I say, well, negotiate it with me. And don't just accept my word that I'm not secretly grading each assignment. Check it out, and we can explore it together. But at the same time, develop horizontal community. So you're not just depending on your adversarial or negotiating relationship with the person who does have more power. But there's going to be emotion in that too, as you shift from being a student who can just do well if they do what the instructions say in the assignment to someone who has to take themselves seriously. So acknowledge affect was another one of the principles. And this one about feedback was very evident in a principle that said develop autonomy. Now, autonomy in American discourse, United States discourse, can mean I just do whatever I want. But autonomy in the way we are thinking about it here is that you, when you get feedback, you're not bowled over by it, and you also don't have to build a wall in front of you. It's something you can take in, pass through, and use what you want. And what would be the last principle? Would be here now, meaning don't ask for someone to prove in advance that a process is going to work. You have to try it out and experience it and see how it works for you, or how it, or try to understand why it didn't work so well for you. So those five principles came out, and so I think the democratized form of feedback and decentralized is part of this larger picture of these five different principles. And later I added, explore diversity, explore difference. So they jostle with each other. They're not all pulling in the same direction. If you're focused on negotiating power and standards, you won't be developing so much horizontal community. So that's, but if you're, those pull in different directions, and sometimes you'll be more on one point of the six-pointed star, and sometimes you'll be more on the other. Maybe you can think of a six-pointed star with springs connecting each pair.
Yeah. I really love the emphasis in that list of principles on the first person embodied kind of imminent playing out of these practices. No one can do it for you, and it's open-ended. You don't know where it will take you. And I think that's one of the things that I really, really appreciated about getting to participate in your workshop, and why I wanted to talk to you more about feedback, because it strikes me that often if we're thinking about, say, classroom practices, that embodied, open-ended, subjective drama it is often not part of how we think about things, even though it's absolutely so essential. The other thing that I really love about how you describe feedback is that the work itself, so say somebody is presenting a work in progress, like you said, say in one of your graduate seminars, the work itself starts to get a certain kind of liveliness, or maybe even a kind of agency through that plus delta exchange, because everybody listening to that person sharing their work gets to say, oh, it could be extended in this way or that way, or I might extend it in this way or that way. So the work itself is granted a kind of liveliness that I think is really, it's really wonderful. And also I think there's a lot of, there's so much that can happen once we grant a life to a project, you know, as opposed to something being done simply for a grade, or, you know, something, work being so anxiety ridden that there isn't the time and space given to, you know, sort of breathe life into this work. So I love that you are asking students to present work before it's completed.
Yeah, I would never go back to final presentations except for the final capstone where people fly in from wherever they're living and they all meet each other for the first time. That's okay to do presentations then. But even in that case, the students are encouraged to spend a fraction of the time talking about what they've done, and another fraction getting us to experience what they've done, and hoping that, put the two together, that if someone's really interested in your work, they'll then go and read the full thing. So you certainly don't, in the final presentation, have to present everything you've done, and you don't have to have the practice engagement with others work perfectly, even in that situation. There's something you said, though, about the liveliness. I can't give you any figures to prove this, but I get a sense that once students have done it to each other, they end up referring to each other's work with more insight and interest. Yeah. They've taken it in. It's not just sitting there and saying, oh, okay, so Peter did a good presentation, you know, Ari did a good presentation, aren't they good students, kind of stuff, and going on to whatever's going on. There is some the ideas are in circulation. And I remember years ago hearing a young cognitive scientist say, mind is a process in circuit. So if we extend that to learning, is a process in circuit. It's something that there's a circulation of thinking that is going on among people. Those five principles or six principles also got summarized in the phrase, and I think that came from, not from the students, I think it came from me discussing the outcome with my wife. And the phrase was, taking initiative in and through relationships. So that connects with what you were saying before about the student's agency and responsibility. I forget the exact words you used. But so you need in this learning process or in this personal and professional development process of a workshop to take initiative in relationships, to share your work with someone that you don't necessarily know as well as you might. You're not necessarily as safe as you might think you need to be. And or to have a discussion with someone that you hadn't met before, or to try an activity that someone leads where you don't know how well it will work. So you take initiative to enter into those situations. And the result is, through those relationships, you're better able to continue to take initiative, including taking yourself seriously rather than just being subject to someone else's advice or direction. So those five or six principles, the jostling of them, has stayed with me ever since it arose out of the student's discomfort with the different new things that were going on. And I think the plus delta is one way that they get comfortable, more comfortable, because they see that they're in the ballpark with everyone else, and they get feedback from, they would all say, even when I never saw what they were saying, they would all say they loved getting these piles of feedback from people.
Mm-hmm. So what I think works so well about your approach to feedback is that it's cultivated, like it's crafted for. So say I am a participant in something that you are facilitating, you will explain, okay, here are the practices that we are going to be doing. So there's a shape to it. And maybe even the shape is concrete, like here's the slip of paper and here are the three questions that are written on the slip of paper and you're going to fill it out. It's amazingly reassuring, I think, to, as a participant, to be given this worked out practice. But also I think it makes it more effective. So I'm interested in that concrete part of feedback. So what instructors might be able to do more intentionally upfront to draw out this kind of relational exchange between students?
Well, the other kind of feedback we used in the workshop, we used in the very first session, was people gave connections and extensions feedback on each autobiographical introduction done by the participants. Extended autobiographical introduction. I think we had 5 minutes each. In the early days of the four-day versions of this workshop, we used to have 15 minutes each. So we're subject to four to speed up in these workshops. But so these connections and extensions feedback, and there's a third part which I'll mention in a second. Connection is just one way I connected with what you said. We share something, we intersect. And one way what you said could be extended. And again, it's like the plus delta. It could be extended because here's a book I think you should read. You might like to read. Sounds like advice when I say you should read. But here's a book that occurs to me that you might read. And or here's a way that I want to draw what you've been saying or the organization or the practice you've mentioned into my own work. So So everyone gets, you know, you get, if they're N people, you get N minus one of these sheets. And it's an incredible web of connectedness that has been developed in a quite short time. And the third thing we added to that is one question you would like to take up with the person. So that's an addition that sort of nudges you in a workshop towards a place where you walk up to that person during a break and you ask them that question. Or the person who gets the feedback goes over to you and says, now tell me why you want to ask me this question and let's talk about it. The same way you're now doing this interview to ask me more about these feedback practices.
That's right. So what I love about that is that through the concrete, in a way it's a script, through the concrete script that you have handed out to each participant or say each student in your class, you are laying the conditions of possibility for very specific things to emerge. Like, here's a question, and then actually carrying out. I will actually come up and ask you a question. I gave a talk recently, and I used your plus delta practice. So I had pieces of paper ready with those three questions on them. And I think there were maybe 40 people at the talk. Do you want to have a guess how many people handed back the plus delta responses to me out of 40?
Seven.
Three, and one was by email. But they were fantastic. And in fact, one of the three, the person who emailed me his responses, we now are having an incredibly rich exchange and we're starting to do some brainstorming together. So, and that would probably not have happened without the plus delta practice. So I'm so glad. I don't know what I did wrong. Maybe I wasn't strict enough. Like, really, I would really like you to fill out these responses. I think people are not used to it. I think it's actually quite countercultural, saying, okay, you are here, but I'm actually going to be asking you to more actively participate, to actively respond by filling out these practices. I don't know if you come across that kind of resistance as well to participating in feedback practices.
Resistance, yes. And falling flat sometimes, yes. I'm quite embarrassed still about some things where I tried to get interaction when I couldn't go to a conference and they agreed to beam me in the early days of the internet and I couldn't see everyone. And then someone said, you know, everyone's left the session. There's only five of us left or something like that. And I think the five were the people who are yet to speak and two others. I just felt so bad for having driven away the audience for the other speaker or speakers. And I still feel bad about it because, like, you've got to do some more preparation when you're trying to change the culture. And some of the preparation is to have armed guards at the door. I mean, to have people who are saying, oh, yeah, can you give me the plus deltas? And people say, oh, yeah, okay, I'll just finish it and so on. Because it's not such a bad thing to do it in the end. I've noticed sometimes when I've done interactive things, say I've been the respondent and instead of just giving a little speech, I've got people involved in developing their own response and maybe pairing up with a neighbor and talking about it, I've noticed people leave and thinking, you're missing out on something. You know, you're just, I can't prove it to you because you've left. But it's a little bit like I had professors who were prima donnas who would say things when people would leave before they'd finished because they wanted to go to the next class and they would berate those who are still there for the people who were leaving. You needed to berate the people who left. But I just relax and let them be. But I do want to just go back to the issue about the web of connections. When I do that in a class now, and it's only in the last few years that I would start every class with autobiographical introductions and these connections and extensions. So, but now I won't go back from it. But most of my students are coming in from a distance now into synchronous sessions, you know, online where we're all meeting at the same time. We can see each other. I will get them to put those connection extensions not on slips of paper, but on an online form. And then I have to assemble them and make it into a PDF and make it available to the students. But when I print it out and I start reading it, I think there's too much information here for me to digest. I can't possibly manage all these interactions, and I'm sure any individual student can't manage them all. And yet there they are. There's the people with all their diverse interests and connections. And so the challenge is still there to go from this very straightforward ritualized feedback to something that actually informs our practice. And so that's an ongoing challenge for me, how to do that.
So I love that piece, that connection. So it's the feedback of the feedback, really, or it's how to turn feedback into an open-ended loop so that it cultivates not only more nourishing relationships, but it cultivates sharper or deeper or more insightful work. One of the ways that I've also learned to do this from you is through these 11, I think there are 11 different ways of responding to somebody's work that Peter Elbow has laid out. And you are actually responding to a draft of this very podcast. And I turned to those prompts from Peter Elbow and chose one, and I gave it to you and asked you, would you be willing to give feedback on this draft of an episode in light of this prompt from Peter Elbow? And so I just love it so much. And I'm going to be embedding that in my class this fall as well, where I'm going to ask the students, which kind of feedback would you like from me? Because I'll be giving feedback on their audio essays in progress. So I'm convinced of the value of being more nuanced in terms of this exchange, in part because of how delicate it can be to feed feedback back into our work. Because sometimes you want this kind of feedback, sometimes you're not ready for that kind of feedback. So I'd love to hear you, and this is kind of my last question to you, I'd love to hear you talk about why you are also struck by these different prompts by Peter Elbow and why you started turning to them as a way to actualize feedback loops in a really productive way.
Well, the central aspect of them is that the person who's looking for feedback takes agency, and that it's not just a matter of, okay, I've handed in my work, now tell me what you think with your criteria, and even if I don't know what they are and you're not sure of them and I worry about being subject to the subjectivity or the fact that you're biased against me and so on, the writer takes some agency and can also think that at certain stages in the development of their writing, different kinds of feedback are more useful. So if I would get students to do peer commentaries on each other's work, there would always be some students who would say, okay, I know how to do this, and start correcting the grammar and so on. I don't correct grammar anymore. I don't think most pieces of writing that students handed in are the penultimate stage before they have to be published. And even if they were, they're professional editors, and part of a professional life is to hire one of them to do that work. So I don't tell the person doing the editing that you have to redo it, but I try to encourage the person giving the material to steer them away from that formulaic, familiar kind of feedback, the correcting of work, to one that uses some of those themes of Elbow's, like, tell me what you see as the center of gravity, and just a simple statement, and hearing back the center of gravity from different people and seeing that there are some commonalities that weren't what you intended, and there are great differences even with the same piece of work, is part of what it means to put work out into the world. There's no one uniform reader to respond in a uniform way. I think that I'm not exactly sure when I came across Elbow's list, but I particularly like the believing and doubting. It gives me a lot of freedom to be playful, to take more risks, to, because the believing is the, you've got to do both. So the believing is like you're explaining why this piece of work is really the most important thing. The world just has to know about this. And the doubting is like just how wrong this is, or how many questions you have about it. And so you're doing, you know that it's going to be read with the knowledge that whatever's this, if there's a believing, there's also a doubting. And if there's a doubting, there's also a believing. The believing should come first for people's egos, but it just allows you to just push further without worrying so much as to whether you've overinterpreted or overexpressed a point. And so, and then you, so then you can be playful. And I did find that commenting without grading was an enormous liberation when I started to do it more than 20 years ago. And I, it's not one of the forms that comes up in the workshop, but it's certainly something in my teaching. I've just stopped. I stopped grading, and I was able to just take a piece of work and say, look, what struck me about this? What were they trying to say to me? Or what came through, or what almost came through? Express that back to the student and then talk about how it could be extended. And sometimes I would just pick up on little feelings or little proto-insights and or hypotheses and venture them. And students had to get used to hearing them that way because they weren't used to hearing these this form of feedback. But then they would end up saying things like, how did you know what was most deeply important to me when I wasn't actually saying it? I don't actually know what's most deeply important. I just picked up on something that they, you know, one of Elbow's feedbacks is what's almost said. And so I would try to make that explicit. And then sometimes it would might go down like a lead balloon. So the ones who were saying, how did you know, were the ones for whom it didn't go down like a lead balloon. And there were others, you know, including someone who was a published writer who said, you know, I would get the response from you and I'd go like, what's he talking about? And then 2 days later, I'd say, oh, I get it. So it shows that this stuff of something having a life is true, that it becomes part of a dialogue that's going on even when we're not explicitly talking to each other. So I like that. I have to say I haven't made many converts to that. Most people think you have to give grades and that's what the system's about, but I'm glad no one's come down on me like a ton of bricks and told me I have to grade everything, because I just can be much more relaxed and do this kind of feedback.
Yeah, and it's a way to honor the work itself. It makes, because your description to me is it sounds a lot like a creative writing workshop in certain ways, and I do think that the academic world would be a better place if it was more explicitly about the creativity, as opposed to like that word that you used a little bit ago, formulaic, as opposed to work being formulaic. Like it is extraordinarily difficult to nourish relational spaces that really are about creativity, as opposed to regurgitating something that has been already established, or, you know, producing for a teacher something that is simply rote that you think that they want to say, that they want you to confirm, you know, you need to confirm what they already think or whatever. So I really love that this connection between liveliness and creativity and feedback. Thank you so much for your time. Is there anything else that you'd want to say about the import of feedback or the nature of feedback?
Something I thought a while ago when we're talking, though, is one of the most important forms of feedback is what a person gives themselves. So making space early and often during a workshop or a class for people to do something like free writing to clear away some distractions and let what they're thinking for themselves come to the surface, even what they're thinking about things that they're not going to share or will never share, is very important. And I've had some people at the end of shorter workshops than the one you're at saying what they're taking away is free writing. So people don't give themselves that space enough to just stop for 5 minutes and try to let their thinking come to the surface rather than, oh, I've got to do this, got to go to this next meeting, got to do that. And so self-feedback, maybe it's not even feedback, but self-realization, self-surfacing is probably the heart of everything.
Yeah, I was teaching Hannah Arendt this week, and that's her definition of thinking. It's the dialogue with self. So she says we can develop a relationship with the self that's a relationship of friendship, or we can develop a relationship to the self that's an adversarial relationship. And in friendship with oneself, that is precisely what happens, this plurality, checking in with oneself, a kind of dialogue. And to be an adversary to oneself means that that check-in simply never happens. It's like you never return home to yourself, as she puts it. And I think it's so important to find ways to model that and also try and draw it out of students. And so I'm so appreciative of the really concrete examples that I have learned from you. Thank you so much. And thank you so much for participating in the podcast in this way.
Look, I'm sorry. There's one more thing. Maybe you don't have enough time in your podcast. But the one more thing was you do the plus deltas and some students don't pick up on much of it. They don't necessarily do more work. And or my commenting, they don't necessarily take too much from what I've offered them. And I don't have a recourse to, well, this isn't good enough, you won't pass this course. And sometimes in undergraduate teaching, you've got to have some recourse to get students to really read the text properly and take it seriously and think of, what is the argument here and so on. But in my graduate work, I'm not doing that. And in a way, what I'm doing, again, is saying, look, if you don't get so much from this course, if you just brush off these things, if you don't do the extra thinking, it's your responsibility. I'm not going to coerce you into doing it. I'm going to wait patiently until you say, oh, yeah, I'm giving this opportunity to take myself seriously. And I think that's a different view of the world than the one that comes under the label of we have standards to uphold.
Yeah, I agree. It's fascinating the difference between the undergraduate and the graduate classroom, I think, developmentally, maybe, in terms of the kinds of practices that we can implement. Well, thank you so much, Peter. I'm so appreciative.